Steph on George Hill. Shot clock at 5. Curry, 3 from the Liberty Bell. Drops it in.
Oh, he is a problem. See how much separation he got there?
Steph Curry does it again last night. This has got to be the story in sports now. It's got to be. Steph Curry is absolutely doing something that guys have never done in the NBA. Last night, Steph Curry did it again, and he beat the 76ers, who have the best record in the Eastern Conference, with MVP candidate and Joel Embiid. Everybody knows you got to slow down Steph Curry, and people still can't do it. Last night, 49 points, 10 three-pointers, 10 of 17 from three, as they beat the Sixers 107-96. Curry scored 20 points in the fourth quarter and hit all 5 of his three-point attempts in the fourth quarter, and he only played 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. That's half of the fourth quarter that he played. With 49 points last night, he became the first player in NBA history age 33 or older with 11 straight 30-plus point games. Kobe Bryant held the previous record back in 2012. Steph Curry's last 5 games, listen very carefully, 49 points, 10 three-pointers, 47 points, 11 three-pointers, 33 points, 4 three-pointers, 42 points, 11 three-pointers, 53 points, and 10 three-pointers. No one in NBA history has made more threes in a 5-game stretch than Steph Curry with 46. Steph Curry's April statistics, and we're April 20th, so this isn't just one weekend. His April statistics, he's averaging 41 points a game, shooting 55% from the floor, 50% from three, 91% from the foul line. He is 72 of 143 from three. He has 72 threes in his last 10 games. Chris Paul, NBA All-Star, has 73 threes for the season. Threes made last week. Steph Curry made 36 threes. That's more than the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Denver Nuggets, the Washington Wizards, Detroit Pistons, and New Orleans Pelicans had as a team. It's unbelievable what he's doing, and his head coach Steve Kerr is running out of words to describe it.
I don't know what else to say. You know, you guys ask me after every game what I think of Steph and his performance, and it's whatever I said last game, just use that tonight. Because it's the same thing after every game. It's just utter amazement at this guy's skill level, heart, mind, focus. Just amazing to watch. I've seen Kobe Bryant, early in his career, had a stretch where he went nuts, and obviously Michael Jordan had some stretches where he just scored like crazy. But obviously nobody's ever shot the ball like this in the history of the game, and even by Steph's own lofty standards, this is above and beyond.
Steve, are you approaching this like a no-hitter? I mean, what do you even say to him at this point?
Nice shot.
nice shot. Keep shooting. Steph Curry had 6 games this season where he's made 10 or more threes in 6 different games this season. No other player has more than 5 of those games in their entire career. He has 6 this season. It's insane. And oh, by the way, he now leads the NBA in scoring. He's passed Bradley Beal, 31.4 points per game. Should he be in the MVP conversation? Yeah. I don't care if his team's 29-29 or whatever it is. Yes, he should be in the conversation. If he keeps this up, he will be the MVP. But I will tell you, there's some other guys that are having some big seasons, and one guy in particular last night had a gigantic game. By the way, Joel Embiid had 28 points, 13 rebounds. He's considered an MVP candidate, the former Jayhawk with the Sixers in that loss to the Warriors. But nobody's talking about Embiid's play at all because of what Steph Curry did. There's another guy that has a chance to be the MVP. Some people think he's the front runner, and he carried his team to a victory last night, and that was Nikola Jokic. He had 47 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists to lead the Nuggets to a dramatic double overtime win over the Grizzlies, 139-137. Of course, playing without Jamal Murray, he's got to shoulder more of the load. In doing this, Jokic became the first center to put up 45-plus points, 15-plus rebounds, and 8-plus assists in a game since Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon back in 1996, 25 years ago. Jokic is having a gigantic year, so some think he should be the MVP. So the race is getting very interesting, and if Harden would have not got hurt, he would be in this conversation, and maybe still is, with the Nets. And And then there's point guard Russell Westbrook of the Wizards, who will not get any chance to be an MVP, but last night he etched his name in the NBA record books. Westbrook and the Wizards beat his former team, the Oklahoma City Thunder. 13 points, 11 rebounds, 17 assists. You may say, well, that's a triple-double. That's nice. What's so cool about what he did? He's the first player in NBA history to do that against every single team in a league. He has a triple-double against every single team in a league. The only reason it wasn't the Thunder because he played on the Thunder for so long, and you knew it was going to happen. He now has 172 career triple-doubles, nine away from tying the all-time record held by Oscar Robertson, and some people thought that would never be touched. So there's some interesting things happening in the NBA night in and night out. And Jokic, I don't consider him a center. You see, this is how the game has evolved in the NBA. I don't think of Steph Curry as a true point guard, and he's not. He's a point guard, yes, but he's not a true point guard. But they're probably really, when you think about it, is there a true point guard anymore? The game's evolved. Is there really a center in the NBA anymore? Do you think of Jokic as a center when he's stepping? Joel Embiid is considered a center.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think of Jokic more of a power forward myself. I think of Embiid as a center who sometimes sits outside too often. But these guys are so much more athletic than ever. They are like Hakeem Olajuwon, except with more range. Mm-hmm. Because Olajuwon reinvented the center position the way he was so nimble and agile. You know, Shaq just bullied his way to the bucket and dunked it. Shaq couldn't hit anything outside of about 5 feet, and he didn't need to. And he couldn't hit his free throws. We know that. But, you know, Tim Duncan, the talk about, it's like, is Tim Duncan a power forward or was he a center? And I would argue he was both. He was a power forward when he played with David Robinson. He was a center without David Robinson. But I always thought of Tim Duncan as a four. I never thought of him as fully a five, but I understand the argument. He played center most of his career after David Robinson left the game. Jokic, I don't think of as a true center. Embiid, I guess I kind of do, but he does so many things that a center doesn't do. Dirk Nowitzki wasn't considered a center. Dirk Nowitzki's just as tall as Jokic. Mm. Why wasn't Nowitzki considered a center? Because he posted up a lot. He posted up probably as much as Jokic does. And, well, he makes threes. Well, yeah, at the time it was like, well, he can't be a center. He steps out and makes threes. Now it's Jokic is a center. Steph Curry's a true point guard. Steph Curry's a point guard. Jokic is a center. And I'm like sitting here and I watch their game. I'm like, they don't play like that. Curry doesn't play like a point guard. And he plays as a shooting guard. And Jokic plays as a stretch four, not a center. But that's what they're, I guess, technically labeled. And Curry, yes, is a point guard. I can live with that. But he's not a true point guard. But then again, there is no true point guard maybe in the NBA anymore. And then with Jokic, is there really a true center anymore? You know, the true centers used to be Mark Eaton at 7'4" with the Jazz. You know, Manute Bol would be a center. You know, Shaq was a center. I mean, those guys lived in the paint. They didn't go outside of the paint. The game has evolved.
The game's evolved to the point where positions don't really mean anything anymore.
Draymond Green plays like a point guard, point forward. LeBron cases. Can play every spot on the floor now.
Yeah. I mean, that's the like high school and college level in some places. Yeah. Like, you play in four guards. Like,
yes.
So this guy's playing the four. He's not a power forward. He's still a guard, right?
Yeah. Right.
Like, but everybody's got to put a label on that, right? Sure. Like, you got five guys on there. It's got to be point, shoot. Small forward, power forward.
You don't
center.
Have to be that at all.
And it's not. And it's not that in the NBA. No. I mean, the NBA, I say right now, basically is positionless. Like,
yes. You
play whatever you play. And, I mean, it's not even always the same guy bringing the ball up the floor. Hasn't been for quite some time. You know, you get different situations and different sets and different lineups. And I'm even watching summer ball where there's two different quote-unquote point guards on my nephew's team, right? There's not even positions on that,
no,
right? And it's so – I think the positions are kind of just people want to put a label on it, but
sure. There's
not really accurate labels anymore because players are so athletic and can do so many things that Patrick Ewing was a center because he stayed down on the block and in the
post,
right?
Yeah.
And back to the basket and then made his moves on his hooks or whatever. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, guys like that.
Right.
You knew they were centers because they were in the center of the lineup.
Greg Ostertag
and the
was
offense,
a center.
And then he got the ball into the middle to the center.
Right.
And it just doesn't – it's not what it is anymore.
Right.
You know, rarely. There's, you know, some teams are still playing that way, but not a whole lot of them.
Yeah, Olajuwon kind of changed the game as a center, although he didn't really shoot any further than 15 feet.
Yeah.
But he had some range, and he was very agile. Now, here's one for you. Jason Tatum for the Boston Celtics. What position is he? I've watched him play. He can post up. He definitely can be a shooting guard. He can play small forward. In the NBA, he plays the four spot sometimes. And he can bring the ball up the floor. But he's listed as a forward slash guard, and that's probably accurate because he can play all four positions. Because let me tell you something. There is hardly ever full court pressure against a guard bringing the ball up the floor. So, honestly, Jokic brings the ball up the floor sometimes. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you cut down? Is he suddenly a point guard? Because this is what I've heard. Well, Steph Curry's a point guard. He brings the ball up the floor. I'm like, so does Jokic. Is he a point guard? Well, Curry brings it up more often. I said, LeBron brings it up more often. Curry, go watch the games. Watch the games. Seriously, watch the games.
Yeah.
LeBron brings the ball up the floor just as much as Steph Curry does, but they don't call LeBron a point guard. Now, why not? He's 6'9", but Magic was 6'9". He was considered a point guard.
Yeah.
Magic didn't score as much as LeBron. Well, so that means he can't be a shooting guard or a point guard. I mean, what it really is, it's positionless. You're right about it. The game has evolved. And by the way, you know, Russell Westbrook, that was 8 straight triple-doubles. Chris Paul passed Magic Johnson. Speaking of Magic, Chris Paul passed Magic Johnson for 5th on the all-time assist list. You want to talk about a true point guard? Chris Paul, to me, would be the closest thing to a true point guard in the NBA right now, because he doesn't take tons of threes. He has a mid-range game. He can drive. He makes his teammates better. He passes. You know, John Stockton was a true point guard, and Stockton became more of a scorer as he got, you know, older. But to me, the true point guards for me, when I think about them, you know, Stockton, I think Chris Paul might be the last of kind of a dying breed, you know, because he doesn't live by the three-point line. He isn't shooting it all the time. Yes, he can score at times and take over. Don't get me wrong. He has games where he scores a lot of points. But, you know, Isaiah Thomas, to me, you know, he was a true point guard, obviously. But Isaiah was times where he'd go nuts and score 40. But there are times where he had 15 assists and scored 11. You know, he had the ability to play both positions. Him and Dumars are kind of interchangeable at the time. Dumars could bring the ball up the floor, but you never called Dumars a point guard. But you did Isaiah. But Dumars could bring the ball up the floor and handle the point, but he was called the two guard. Mm. So it is interesting how we label players.
Like Tony Parker was that for the Spurs.
Yeah, Tony Parker was a true point guard, but he could score.
He could score, but again, he wasn't, you know, corner threes is when he was hitting threes, just like every other Spurs player that hits threes, right?
Yeah.
And he really did facilitate and hit that teardrop, you know, and those kind of, with the ball in his hands, he knew what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you want from a point guard.
Right.
Whether they're going to dish, whether they're going to score, they have the ball in their hands and they're creating for the offense in every way.
Yeah. Well, you think about the Chicago Bulls and their 6 championships. Who was the point guard? They didn't
have a true point guard.
They didn't have one. I mean, Scottie Pippen was probably as much of their point guard, and he wasn't called a point guard.
Yeah.
Pippen and Jordan brought the ball up for most of the time. Yeah, B.J. Armstrong
triangle
sometimes.
You know, when
Kerr
Kobe,
did,
you know,
but they weren't point guards.
Kobe wasn't a point, but he bring the ball. They didn't. Right. The Lakers didn't really have a true point guard on that when Phil Jackson was there running the triangle either. And you didn't need a true point guard in the triangle, right?
No.
It's about being in the right positions and understanding where you need to be, no matter what position you're playing, except center. I mean, Shaq pretty much knew where he had to be for the most part. And they started mixing in some pick and roll, so it changed a little bit.
Right. Derek Fisher might have been point guard there for some of those Laker teams, but the Bulls never did have a true point guard, and that worked out all right. Because Pippen, in essence, was the point forward or point guard, and so it is interesting how we label guys. But the bottom line is this. Steph Curry is absolutely out of his mind awesome right now, and teams still can't slow him down. There's no Klay Thompson on the floor. Can you – I mean, he's got Draymond Green, who's not an offensive threat. And so he's playing with cast-offs like Kelly Oubre, who's out hurt right now. Andrew Wiggins, he's carrying the team. They'd be nowhere close to sniffing the playoffs without Steph Curry, obviously.
No.
And he's missed some time with the tailbone. He's still the leading scorer in the NBA. And what he's doing is just insane. And then the left-handed off-balance shot he threw up the other night on Saturday, where did you see that play? Oh, my gosh. Where he was getting fouled, pump fake, spun around, did like a pirouette, and threw it up with his left hand and made a 22-footer. It was almost a three, and he was fouled. He's just – right now, he better be enjoying this, because I don't know if anybody in the NBA will ever have the stretch again, and I don't know if he will, although he's capable of it. And he is so fun to watch, and he is the best shooter in NBA history. I'll just go ahead and say it. All the athleticism that's out there nowadays, and he does not have super talent around him. This isn't the 73-9 Warriors, okay? This is a Warrior team that's 29-29. He's amazing to watch. Jokic is a matchup nightmare, because he can take you inside with smaller guys. He's a great – if you double him, he'll kill you with the pass. He's a great passer. And if you leave him outside, he's still knocked down the 17-footer or the three-pointer. I mean, and Jokic, he's only getting better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jokic is just a beast to deal with. It's interesting how the game has evolved. So that's a look at the NBA. We don't always start with the NBA to start the ticket, but today it's definitely noteworthy with what Curry and Jokic did last night. Other NBA games last night, the Bulls knocked out the Celtics. Celtics won 6 or 7 in a row, so they lose to the Bulls. So the Bulls still have a chance to make the playoffs, and they're 24-33. Dusty Spurs beat the Pacers 109-94. And what other noteworthy ones here? We mentioned Westbrook with a triple-double. And then a great game last night, two of the best teams in the league. The Suns, Chris Paul, 22 points, 13 assists. Giannis with 33 for the Bucks. The Suns went on a controversial call with 0.3 left in overtime, a foul, and Devin Booker hit a free throw to seal it, 128-127 overtime. And then the Nuggets in double overtime with Jokic with the monster game, 47 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists. And the Lakers lose to the Jazz. Jazz with no Donovan Mitchell. Lakers, no LeBron, and no Anthony Davis. Lakers fall to the Jazz, 111-97. That's a look at the NBA. Royals baseball on the way, plus a KU Jayhawk has found a new home, and it's in the Big 12. We'll tell you what Big 12 team this former Jayhawk has signed with, and a former Chief has retired as well. And a milestone for the Royals on the Hill last night. But first, we will now turn it over to Dusty for local sports, which I can tell you the Beloit softball games for today have been postponed. No shocker there with the snow on the grounds in our area here after the last 24 hours. So Beloit softball against Ellsworth, that has been postponed. They hope to have a makeup date, and I would imagine pretty much everything's been postponed.
Take the day off, everybody. Find something to stay inside, watch Netflix. I don't know what you want to do, but
I know a lot of kids were excited about
snow. Go outside because it's going to be nicer already later today.
Yeah, right. I think a lot of kids, excluding my kids in my house, and a lot of people that work in the schools that I talked to up in the press box last night at the baseball, JV baseball game in Beloit, we're hoping to have a snow day today.
Yeah.
And guess what? They had to go to work. Even though there's snow, it'll melt fairly quickly. And so everybody had to go to school. Nobody got to sleep in.
No snow on the pavement and stuff. It just
it's
just
wet snow.
In the grass. And, nothing going on really today. Republic County track and field meet was already canceled yesterday. And then Wilson Invitational track and field meet scheduled for today at Russell has been postponed to Wednesday, April 28th. NPL Golf at Tipton postponed to Monday, May 26th. So those are the events. Osborne track not traveling to Blue Hill, Nebraska today either. They've made a new date in their track schedule for that. So that's what's not going on today that was supposed to be going on today. There was one event yesterday, the Plainville Golf Invitational, as far as immediate area teams are concerned, and Osborne finished third place at that in boys golf. Parker Krobe of Plainville won the individual championship, and Plainville won the team title there yesterday. Brandon Befford of Osborne tied for fifth place, and Grady Walters tied for ninth for the Bulldogs. You can find the full results from the Plainville Invitational at ncksports.com. There was some NCAA baseball and softball yesterday, and Minneapolis and Russell split their games in baseball. And then in softball, Russell swept Minneapolis, and Clay Center swept Southeast of Saline. You can find all the scores from high school baseball and softball at ncksports.com. Updated standings and everything you might need there at the website. So that's local sports. It's a little bit slow right now with the weather. So
yep, weather playing a damper on that, no doubt. The Royals last night, they fall to the Tampa Bay Rays by a final of 4-1. So bad news, they lost. Good news, they're still in first place by a game over the Indians, and Danny Duffy pitched well again last night.
And Danny Duffy has 1,000 strikeouts in his career.
6 innings, 2 runs, 8 Ks. Duffy was fantastic again, but the Royals couldn't do anything offensively, and the Rays were helped by a fifth-inning error by first baseman Carlos Santana. Here's Mike Matheny, manager of the Royals, on Duffy's performance in that fatal error in the fifth.
Duff was fantastic today. Continues to impress us and give us a great chance. Even got tired there at the end, but kept pushing and made great pitches all the way through. Just couldn't get anything going offensively, and obviously we had a miscue there from a very good defender. He makes that play every time. Went up, and I could tell as soon as it went up, it was going to be a tough fly ball. But I know that's one he'll tell you that he wants to catch every single time and will. But unfortunately, it ended up costing a little, and we couldn't get anything going offensively to make up for it.
So the Royals lose 4-1, but as we said, they're still in first place in the division. Noteworthy things from last night, Duffy's 1,000th strikeout. Salvador Perez had another base hit last night. Here's the thing about the Royals. They're 9-6, and we talked about some power rankings have them as the 20th best team out of 30 teams in the league, which is just disrespectful, and people aren't paying attention, or it just means they don't believe the Royals are going to keep it going. Brad Keller will be on the Hill tonight. Who was very good his last time out. And the Royals now 9-6. The Rays are 9-8. But here's the thing, and why I understand the skepticism in regards to the starting pitching, don't know. The bullpen, I think, will be fine. People may be questioning that a little bit. But the Royals right now are 9-6. And Benintendi hasn't got going. He's hitting 204. Hunter Dozier hasn't got going. Jorge Soler is struggling at the plate. Mm-hmm. He swung at a pitch about 2 feet outside last night. He didn't play well last year during the abbreviated COVID season either. And Santana's only hitting 231, and it's early. And Mondesi hasn't played a game yet. So if the Royals can do what they're doing now without three main guys in their lineup that aren't hitting and a fourth that sets the table in the two spot, Mondesi, with his speed, and, of course, the question is, will he be the second half Mondesi or the first half Mondesi from last year? There's reason to be very optimistic instead of skeptical about what the Royals are doing. Because the rotation, yes, it's early, it's hard to tell, but, you know, Duffy, is he going to keep doing what he's doing? No. But he's, for a fourth starter, he's doing fine. You know, Brady Singer looked great last time out. Keller looked great last time out. They were a little up and down early. Miner's going to be, I think, one of those. He's going to end up being your four or five starter in a way. Duffy might end up being your third. Junis has got some new pitching. He's got a new pitch, cutter. He's got a little bit of a new repertoire. He's looked very good. So the starting pitching doesn't look as bad as some people might have thought. Now, can they do it over 162 games? That's left to be seen. The bullpen, a lot of people think, is going to be fine. I still wonder about closer. I don't know if Greg Holland can keep doing what he's doing. And Wade Davis is, you know, it's not like he's been, you know, been the Wade Davis back in 15, which how would you expect that? That was 6 years ago. But offensively, the Royals have been a little bit up and down. Last night, just five hits and one run. Defensively lately, they've had a few more errors than they did early in the year. So that maybe is concerning, maybe not. I think they'll be fine. But you really, it depends on how you want to look at it, half full or half empty. If you're half empty, you're saying, well, the starting pitching's still a big question mark. We've got guys struggling at the plate. Benintendi is the same guy that the Red Sox gave up on. Taylor's coming down the earth offensively. Dozier can't hit. Soler's lost it at the plate. Santana's old. You know, you can make that. You could say all those things. Or you could be optimistic, say Santana has done okay, but he's going to get hot. Soler is going to figure it out. Dozier's definitely going to figure it out. Benintendi is just getting used to a new team. You get Mondesi back, and you've got a little bit more depth in the starting rotation in the minors than you used to have. We got some veterans mixed with some young guys, the hard throwers in the bullpen. You can really argue it from either side right now. You could also counter and say, well, Salvi's not going to keep playing the way he's been playing lately, and that's probably true. It'll probably come down to earth a little bit. But I find reason to be optimistic that they're 9-6 in a game up in the division with three main guys in their lineup, Soler, Dozier, and Benintendi, not providing much. And Mondesi not even there right now. That's 44% of your offensive lineup, people.
Yeah. Well, it's a team that really hasn't found a lot of consistency yet, and they're 9-6, right?
Right.
So for outsider looking in, they're going to say they can't keep this up, but they don't even know what they're trying to keep up, right? Mm-hmm. No, they're not. They might improve that, maybe not keep it up, but this might be different, a way of going about things once they have everybody in and once they get guys going. Now, obviously, you can't guarantee that any of those guys are ever going to get going, right? That they're not going to struggle throughout a lot of the season. You don't know that until you actually go out and get it. But, obviously you're encouraged by Brad Keller's last start after a slow start. And some of those things that you see from other players are like, well, maybe this guy can do this too, and we can get everything to come together in the right time. And, I mean, if they do that, that's a team that's obviously at least a wild card team. If they do that, right?
Right.
Already
sure.
In first place in their division right now.
Right.
I mean, if you want to dream and think about moving forward to that, they
right.
would definitely be in contention for that if they continue on the right path and get those guys to make improvements and get Mondesi back in the lineup and he can be effective.
If Mondesi plays like he did towards the end of the second half of last season, that's just a gigantic shot in the arm.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that could, you know, obviously set the table for Soler and Dozier and Salvi and Santana. So hopefully get him back soon. But Duffy was solid again last night, but the Royals, three errors in the game, they lose 4-1. And so there's an interesting story on MLB.com about four teams that are unexpectedly in first place. And the Royals aren't the only ones that are a surprise right now, one by one here. The Cincinnati Reds lead the NL Central They have a half-game lead on Milwaukee. Not much was expected of the Reds. The last time they made the playoffs was 2012, 9 years ago. So the Reds are a team that has, well, maybe overachieved. People, I'm sure, are skeptical of the Reds. The Red Sox, not a lot was expected of them. You know, they can't afford to keep their key players. They got rid of Mookie Betts and others. They have a two-game lead over Tampa Bay. They're 11-6. They had a nine-game winning streak at one point, so that's a bit of a surprise because a lot of people thought it was going to be the Yankees and Rays winning the East. Then, of course, there's the Royals. Last time they were in the playoffs is when they won the World Series, Game 5 over the Mets back in November of 2015. Reasons to believe that they are for real, reasons to be skeptical, as we just went through. And another team that's off to a great start is the Seattle Mariners, which I think it was last year. No, 2 years ago, the Mariners were off to a great start and then ended up being a horrible team, last place in their division. So it isn't always how you start, it's how you finish, although you can bury yourself with a bad start. Lord knows the Royals fans know that over the years. Mm-hmm. The Mariners have a 1.5 game lead over the second place Angels. The Mariners are 11-6. Last time the Mariners made the playoffs, I didn't realize it's been this long. It's been two decades. 2001 was the last time the Mariners went to the playoffs. I did not realize that.
They have. They've had good starts sometimes, and then they just fade.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you got Boston, Kansas City, and Seattle, all three teams that people didn't expect leading every division in the American League. And in the National League, you got the, you know, Dodgers. You expected them to be good. But Cincinnati's leading the Central. The Cubs are in last place. And the NL East, a lot of people liked Atlanta. And it's the Mets that are in first place, although the Mets did pick up Francisco Lindor and make some improvements on their team in the offseason. It's early, obviously. We've only played basically 10% of the season, so we got a bit of ways to go here, and we don't have the 60-game sprint like we did last year with COVID. It's 162 games. But so far, a good start for the Royals. A former Kansas Jayhawk who entered the transfer portal has decided where he's going to play ball, and there's actually a couple of them. Tyron Foster Grant is going to DePaul. Remember Charlie Moore used to be at KU? He went to DePaul. Now he's in the transfer portal again. And Tristan Aruna is going to go to Iowa State. He goes from the second place in the Big 12 team to last place, a team that didn't win a game in the Big 12. And Aruna averaged 2.8 points, 1.5 rebounds for KU last year. As a sophomore, he moves within the Big 12 to Iowa State. So KU fans can have fun booing him when he comes back, which I think is silly because it's not like he, you know, did anything horrible to KU. It just didn't work. He didn't play as much, and he didn't end up working. You can get mad because he didn't fight through adversity, but if he saw the writing on the wall that they're bringing these guys in at my position, I'm not going to play, I should transfer, and he did.
Yeah.
And now he's going to Iowa State where he'll get more opportunities. So, you know, to each their own. I have no problem with it, but it is that type of thing we've talked about before where you're going to see more and more transfers within conference, and I personally don't like that, but it is what it is. Tanner Groves, the big kid that had a whole bunch of points against KU, he's going to Oklahoma as a transfer, so KU's got to deal with him two, maybe three times next year after he lit him up in the NCAA tournament, although it was a loss for Eastern Washington.
Yeah.
And Brady Manick's going from Oklahoma to North Carolina, you see that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like free agency.
Yeah, it is. It's just who's going where, and I don't like it at K-State because it happens year after year. Just with the situation, you got to learn all these new names.
Sure.
Now it's everywhere, right? Like,
right.
I got to learn who's going to be the leading scorer for this team now and this team. And it's kind of what we've done as K-State fans for a few years now on steroids because it's just like who's who anywhere right now. But, again, that's where we're at. And you move on, adjust with it, and I'm just kind of interested to see if it messes up kind of like the, I don't know. I think it might change a lot of the game, not just the certain teams. It might kind of, there might be a lot of difference in the, maybe even the style of play and then the quality of play. I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
It will be interesting how it all puts together. You know, K-State made an announcement yesterday. They're going to keep 10 spots in their football roster, 10 of the 25 spots each year of scholarships for transfers.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, that's what you got to do now.
I think you're right. I think you got to do it.
It's
but to announce
take
it
advantage
like that,
of it, right?
And yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think you'll see more programs doing that.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, back to the Royals. We had the power rankings yesterday. One place said the Royals ranked 20th. There's a new one or a different one. Has the Royals 11th. Now that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
They got the Indians. They got the Indians and the White Sox ahead of the Royals, even though the Royals are ahead in the standings. But okay,
interesting.
That is interesting. And the Yankees, who have the second worst record in baseball, of course, aren't the second worst team on this ranking list, are they? The Rockies are the worst, by the way, at 4-12. Yankees are 20th on this list, just if you're curious about that. It just popped up there on my tube there. Alex Smith retiring. Interesting because he wanted to play. He was a cap casualty by the Washington football team. He went to Jacksonville and visited Jacksonville. His former coach at Utah, Urban Meyer, is now the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, if you didn't know that. He considered playing for his former coach, but ultimately decided to retire. Here's Alex Smith thanking the fans, calling it a career.
So to everyone out there, whether you're a part of Niner Nation, the Chiefs Kingdom, or the Burgundy and Gold, I thank you. To all the men I had the privilege of standing with and playing alongside, thank you. I want to say thank you for believing in me, and thank you for helping me believe in myself and in the impossible. Because even though I've got plenty of snaps left in me, after 16 years of giving this game everything I've got, I can't wait to see what else is possible.
Really, not much of a better way for Smith to go out other than if he could have played in the playoffs. He was hurt and couldn't play with a calf injury, but it's pretty amazing what he did. Nearly lost his leg, nearly lost his life, and then he comes back and plays and 5-1 as a starter with the Washington football team, helped lead him to the playoffs. Granted, it wasn't a great division, but he still made a difference, no doubt. And he said, even though I got plenty of snaps left in me, he's ready to discover what awaits him in his next step in life and first beyond football. Of course, football drove him to battle through that recovery, be able to take long walks with his wife, Elizabeth, and to run around with his kids in the backyard. Powered him on the field last year as well. But, you talked there for a while that he wanted to have a chance to compete for a starting job somewhere. And Jacksonville had been interesting because they're going to probably draft Trevor Lawrence number one. If Smith went there, he would have been a mentor for him. And, of course, we know Alex Smith is a mentor. Patrick Mahomes worked out very well for Mahomes and the Chiefs. And so Alex Smith is hanging it up. He was, with the Chiefs, he was 50-26 as a starter. He went to the Pro Bowl 3 times. So clearly he's a Hall of Famer. If Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer without Pro Bowl trips, Smith had 3. Do you think Alex Smith's a Hall of Famer? Of course you don't. But Julian Edelman is. Okay. Granted, Alex didn't do a lot in the playoffs. I get that. His career record as starter, 99-67. That's pretty good. And his TD interception ratio wasn't bad either. Passer rating, 87. His 99 wins are the fifth most of any quarterback selected number one behind Peyton Manning, John Elway, Eli Manning, and Terry Bradshaw. Smith also joined Brett Favre as the only quarterback since 1950 to start on 3 or more teams and have a winning record with each one, proving that while he was never quite a superstar at the quarterback position, he was a winner. Andy Reid was asked about Alex Smith's career yesterday.
You guys know what I feel about him. He's just a heck of a person. Had a great career. Played so many years here with different teams, and everywhere he went, he made him better. I texted him a while back, if he gets into coaching, I get first dibs on him, so which I doubt he will, but if he decides to go that route, he would be a guy that you'd love to have on your staff. But he's special person. Go down as one of my all-time favorites there.
Alex Smith, and we've talked about this before, but what the Chiefs franchise turned around when they hired Andy Reid and traded for Alex Smith, because Andy Reid knew he needed a quarterback. They went and got one. Alex Smith came to Kansas City. They immediately went 9-0. They went to the playoffs immediately. He did help break that stretch of playoff losses by winning in Houston. He played great in the first half of that playoff game against Tennessee at home, and then Kelsey got a concussion, and Alex Smith disappeared offensively, and the Chiefs, I thought, got conservative in that game, and then they couldn't stop Derrick Henry. And that was his last game as a Chief, because Mahomes took over the year after, and that was the right decision. But if you can't like Alex Smith, then you can't like anyone. Because what he went through, him and his family, and the horrible injury that he suffered, and it's one thing to survive it, but to come back and with the class and dignity that he did, and then to have the success that he did, which was phenomenal, be the NFL Comeback Player of the Year, which was easy, and to claim in regards to he earned that, but it wasn't easy to get back to the football field and then help lead a team to the playoffs. It is a good way to go out and not risk further injury. And I'm sure his wife was holding her breath every time he went onto the field last year. And it's great that he can still play and throw the ball around and run around with his kids in the backyard, because it looked like he might have to have his leg amputated. If you haven't seen the E60 thing on Alex Smith, you should, although there are some graphic pictures you got to be prepared for of his leg. It is. We overuse the word amazing. We overuse the word courageous, I think. I think we overuse the word brave, Those words, I think, need to be reserved for special instances. Like, I get tired of watching sporting events where a guy's on a sprained ankle and he's courageous. If he's playing with a broken foot, maybe a sprained ankle, you can play on a sprained ankle. Don't sit in here and tell me he's courageous. He's courageous for stepping in and taking a charge against a 6'8", 240-pound player. Okay, I don't put courage in that description. We get it caught up in amazing. It was amazing. It was amazing. It was amazing. It was amazing. And it's like, is it amazing? Like, Steph Curry, what he's doing is amazing. What Alex Smith did was amazing. All right? But we label that too easily. It's just very, I think it's easy and it's lazy to immediately say, oh, what a courageous play there, taking the charge. What a courageous play by getting hit by that pitch. You know, here, I will say this. I don't think courage applies to a lot of players or athletes. I really, truly don't. But in this case, I think it does. For Alex Smith and what he went through and the fact that he almost has his leg amputated, had to fight for his life, he had flesh-eating bacteria eating up his leg, I think it does, and the positive attitude that he had, and that helped him get through it, no question, and his family. His wife was extremely strong by his side. He had great people around him, and yes, he was privy to people that a regular Joe Schmo wouldn't get in that situation. Don't get me wrong. But I think if you're ever going to use a word, if you're going to ever use the word brave or courageous for an athlete, I hardly ever use it for any athlete. In fact, I don't even know if I have used it except for something an athlete's done off the field, like, you know, prevented somebody from killing somebody or jumped into a burning car, you know, things like that. That's brave. That's courageous. But I do think what Alex Smith went through certainly would be something where you could throw that adjective in here. Amazing certainly fits. Beating the odds, things like that. But I do think there's a little bit of courage there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's courage is you got to fight and face something you're scared of, right?
Right.
No matter how you use it. We might overuse it, but, I mean, there's some things that would be, by definition, courage, but I think we do overuse it. But on that, I mean, you could, I mean.
To step back on the field is courageous because he knew he could have had that horrible thing happen to him again.
Yeah, I mean, that's going through his mind, and he's admitted that, right? Yeah.
Like, how could you not?
And the family has too, right? Like, you go out on the floor, you're scared, but you're facing that. You have to have courage to face that, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Everybody's watched Wizard of Oz, see the Cowardly Lion, right?
Sure.
He wants his courage. I mean, you got to be able to face things you're afraid of, and that's what it is. I've seen it at the high school level. You know, some kids coming back from, you know, concussions or injuries that you know when they get out there, a little trepidatious, or they're not ready for it. But they got to do it. You have to have that mindset of, if this is really what I want to do, mm-hmm. if this is what I want and how I want to proceed with this, I've got to do it sometime. I've got to step out there and be able to do what I want and be able to get past maybe that fear that might be in the back of your mind or even at the front of your mind at the start of that. And so, yeah, I mean, absolutely it was courageous and brave of and all those things, I feel like, for Alex Smith to do what he did to come back. I mean, I don't think any of the adjectives are overused or inappropriate for the situation that Alex Smith went through.
Yeah, I mean, and you have people that have beaten cancer, battled cancer, that actually, you know, obviously the Jones kid from Texas, you know, leukemia, coming back and playing. We've seen various instances of that as well. Sad news passed along. NBA legend Scottie Pippen shared the news yesterday that his oldest son, Antron, has died. He was only 33. Cause of death was not given. Pippen wrote on a social media post, "I'm heartbroken to share that yesterday I said goodbye to my firstborn son, Antron. The two of us shared a love for basketball, and we had countless conversations about the game. Antron suffered from chronic asthma, and if he hadn't had it, I truly believe he would have made it to the NBA. He never let that get him down, though. Antron stayed positive and worked hard, and I'm so proud of the man that he became. Please keep his mom, Karen, and all of his family and friends in your thoughts and prayers. A kind heart and beautiful soul gone way too soon. I love you, son. Rest easy until we meet again." I can't imagine. You know, you're not supposed to be burying your son or daughter. As a parent, it's supposed to be you first. And, of course, in the five-year anniversary of Noah Smith the other day, you know, that still gets me. And that was 5 years ago. Nobody should have to go through that pain, and nobody should have to organize a funeral for their child, especially at such a young age. And in this case, Scottie Pippen, you know, his son, 33, should be just getting into, I mean, he should be you know, so much life ahead of him, and there's not. So thoughts and prayers go out to Scottie Pippen and his family as the passing of his oldest son, Antron, at the age of 33. And then getting back to Alex Smith for just a quick moment, you know, it'll be interesting what Alex Smith does. Now, will he just end up, you know, being a father and a dad, or will he be involved in football in some way? And Andy Reid, he threw it out there. He's like, hey, I got first dibs on him if he wants to be a coach. Wouldn't this be crazy if Mike Kafka is a quarterback coach of the Chiefs, and he's had some looks at being a head coach?
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of fun. So a year from now, next offseason, Kafka gets a head coaching job, and Bieniemy maybe finally gets his job. Now you have an opening, an offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. You don't think Andy Reid might make a phone call to Alex Smith?
Oh, yeah. He definitely
I'll bet
will.
You he'll be on
he'll
the short
make the
list.
Call, whether he says, yeah, I'm coming,
wouldn't
and
it be
I'll
crazy
do it.
If,
I don't know.
Wouldn't it be crazy if Alex Smith, the number one overall pick in the NFL draft and a pretty solid career, and then was pushed out of Kansas City because the Chiefs drafted Mahomes, and also Smith helped with his development, ends up being Mahomes' quarterback's coach two years from now? I can see it happening.
Oh, yeah.
They love Kansas City. Him and his wife love Kansas City.
Yeah.
So that would be kind of cool, actually.
I wouldn't be opposed to any of that, honestly.
I
mean,
no problem with it.
He knows the system. He knows the head coach. He knows everything he needs to know about it. He just didn't perform the same way Patrick Mahomes does, right?
Right.
We talk about, like, how many people you see, like, that are, you know, maybe not the greatest gifted athletes, but are outstanding and unreal coaches. Like, they're cerebral. Mm-hmm. They know the game. And I really feel like Alex Smith is that.
I agree with that.
And I think sometimes I think that was a detriment to him, right, that he was so cerebral. He knew that I didn't want to make any mistakes anymore.
He was a little too careful.
So if I throw an interception, I'm not going to take that chance again. And so, but at the same time, I mean, he's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing out there. And there's not a whole lot of people do have the same set as Patrick Mahomes ever in the history
of the game.
Not many
people have the arm that he has.
It's hard to compare that, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, he still did great things, and he's definitely got the football mind to be able to do it. There's no doubt.
Another football note, Steelers have signed Mike Tomlin, their head coach, to an extension through the 2024 season. I still laugh at people that want to get rid of Mike Tomlin, Steeler fans I know of that get tired of Tomlin. I'm like, you're only tired of him because he hasn't won a Super Bowl recently, and the other thing is he's been there for so long. That's probably why you're tired of him. If Mike Tomlin was let go by the Steelers, he'd be a head coach within a day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, kind of like Andy Reid. Yeah, the Chiefs, remember when Andy Reid was available? Didn't have a good last year at Philadelphia, been at Philadelphia 14 years. The Cardinals were interested in him and a couple other teams, and the Chiefs sent a plane to go get Andy Reid. They're like, that's the guy we want to talk to, and we want to. And they didn't let him leave until they had him wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you do. And we talked about this before, the whole K-State thing back in the day with Brad Underwood and whatever. And, you know, we talked about KU. They got their guy when Roy Williams left for North Carolina. You've got to be super proactive. If there's a guy you know you want, I think sometimes people are too timid. If there's a guy you want, all right, whether it's in the draft or whether it's a coach, and whether it's college or whether it's pro, if there is a guy that you want and you really feel strongly in, you go get him. You do whatever it takes. I'm serious. You do whatever it takes. And you think about it. The two gigantic moves the Chiefs have made, we mentioned Alex Smith was a key move back when Andy Reid took over, but think about this for a second. Why are the Chiefs, looks like the favorites again in the AFC, the projected win total by Vegas is 12. Andy Reid and Mahomes have never won less than 12 in his 3 years as a starter. Think about what the Chiefs have done compared to other NFL teams, because this is a big reason why the Chiefs are, honestly, the class of the NFL. And they've been the two straight Super Bowls. They identified, we want Andy Reid. They made it happen. They didn't let Andy Reid go interview with other people. They locked him up. And when they identified Patrick Mahomes as the guy they wanted, they didn't balk. Maybe I'm sure they contemplated a little bit, although it doesn't sound like they really did. They knew they wanted to move up 17 spots. They gave up the draft capital. They knew that was the guy they wanted. And I've said this for a long time, and you could be wrong and you can be right. But if you believe that the guy you need to be your quarterback, you believe the franchise quarterback for your team is in the draft, and you're sitting at 27 as the Chiefs were that year and traded up with the Bills for number 10 and jumped ahead of the Saints, who were going to take Mahomes with the 11th pick, you do whatever it takes to get that guy. Now, it may blow up in your face. It very well could. You know, the Royals did whatever it took to get Johnny Cueto, and they got Ben Zobrist. Now, that worked out great. Could have blew up in their face. It didn't. It worked.
The Chiefs could have blew up in their face. Mahomes could have been a turnover machine. Who knows? Injury prone right off the bat, and it might not have worked, or Alex Smith refused to help mentor Patrick Mahomes. Who knows what could have happened? Andy Reid, you know, he could end up coming to Kansas City, and they'd go 6-10, 6-10. But the Chiefs identified two people over the last 10 years that they knew they wanted and they needed. Andy Reid was number one. They went and got him, and they didn't. They just made sure they got him. And Mahomes, they made sure they got him. A lot of people make a lot of fun of the Chicago Bears when they traded from pick 3 to pick 2, which was weird, trading up one pick to get Trubisky with a team that clearly wasn't going to take Trubisky, so why did they have to jump him? I still don't quite fully understand that. But if you have any thinking that somebody's going to take your guy and you want him that badly, then you do everything you can to go get him. And if that means giving up lots of draft picks, you do it. If it blows up in your face, you at least went with the guy you wanted instead of wondering, what if we would have taken a chance on him? I can guarantee you the Saints have already wondered, what if? Sean Payton's almost said it without really saying it. What if he would have been 11? What if the Chiefs hadn't traded up? What if we traded up to 9? What if? And the Chiefs have not done the what if type of thing. They did everything to get who they've got with Mahomes and Reed. Now, you could say they probably gave everything they could to try to get Trent Williams, and Williams would have been a Chief at left tackle had he not had an unbelievable relationship with the Shanahan family. That was a unique situation. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs threw everything out there. Money-wise, it was just as much money, but he ended up going with the Niners because things were all even. The Chiefs did as much as they could to get Trent Williams, but the Chiefs have been all in when they went to get Andy Reid. That was the right decision in hindsight. Clearly, they felt it was the right decision then, and they moved up 17 spots. And the Buffalo Bills still have a pretty good quarterback in Josh Allen, but they could also ask themselves, what if we didn't trade that pick and we would have taken Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes at number 10? The Chiefs identified who they wanted. They went and got him. The Kansas Jayhawks back in 2003, when Roy Williams left and went to North Carolina, they identified the guy they wanted. They went, they got him. You go get who you believe, you make it happen. And I don't want to hear excuses about it's about enough money. There's plenty of money in sports. There's plenty of money in the Power 5 Division 1 institutions. There's plenty of money in the pros. There's plenty of draft capital in the pros. There's ways to make it happen. It's just a matter of if you're all in or not. And what happens is guys are all in until they got to pull the trigger on that decision, whether it's to throw an offer at some coach or whether it's to make a phone call or whether it's to call in at the call in the commissioner and say, all right, we're doing this. Yep, we've agreed to it. Commissioner Goodell, we are trading with the Buffalo Bills to move up 17 spots in a draft, and we will select Patrick Mahomes. Maybe there's no hesitation at all. That they knew that's what they wanted to do. But there are, I think, a lot of organizations and people in the organizations that get up, they have this gumption, and they believe, and then they get to the last moment, and they have second thoughts. It's kind of like, you know, walking down the aisle to get married. You know this person you want to be with, but all of a sudden, as you're walking down the aisle, you may suddenly go, now I'm going to be married. I mean, and I didn't have that. I didn't think that, by the way. My wife's not. I did not think that. But that would be a comparison. You know, you start to wonder a little bit.
It's cold feet, right?
That's what it is, cold feet. And it can be whether it's a wedding. It can be whether they ask the you have all this confidence in the world to go ask that pretty girl or that handsome guy out for the prom. And then at the last second, you're like, what if they say no? I had so much confidence, and then it just disappeared in a moment, cold feet. That can happen. The Chiefs have not done that. They have flat out identified their coach. They got him. They identified their quarterback. They got him. They identified, we're not going to let Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and guys become free agents. Chris Jones, we're going to lock him up. Now, I think the Chris Jones thing could still hurt him, but you can't win them all either. Tyrann Mathieu is an interesting example right now. He's going in the final year of his contract. Do you know he's going to change his number from 32 to 21?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's talking about new beginning. Mm-hmm. New beginning. I don't know. I got to double check that. Was this year or he's planning on the year after? But anyway, he's going to be a free agent, so he's going into a contract year. And a lot of people say the Chiefs should, you know, sign him to a long-term deal and get it done. He's not exactly a young pup either, though. And so maybe the Chiefs are a little hesitant on that situation. They might let it play out. He's had some severe injuries in his career, too. But when the Chiefs know they want somebody, they just make sure that they take care of it. And I like that.
And it's worked out, right?
I don't agree with every single thing they do, but I'm not the head of the organization, and I wouldn't hit about 1,000 either. So it's fine that they're doing what they're doing, and who's to argue with the success? With 3 straight division titles and 2 straight Super Bowl appearances, I'd say they've hit a home run with their coach, and they hit a home run with their quarterback. And, yeah, everything else, it was worth it.
Yeah, because there's countless times in sports when people have identified that, right?
Yes.
And it didn't work.
Right.
Like, there's more of those than when it works out basically perfectly like it did for the Chiefs.
Absolutely.
Right? So you do still have to have that. I mean, you can't be scared of it.
No.
Because you have to have courage in that aspect too, right? You have to be able to go ahead and say, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do this, even if it's not popular, but it's who we've identified as who we want, right? And so, obviously, the Bears identified Mitchell Trubisky. That didn't work out for them. You know, they have other things that haven't worked out for them in their history at the quarterback position for sure. But, but it is. I mean, you still have to do it no matter how you don't know how it's going to end up. You don't know how that's going to work out. But you've got to be strong in your convictions, I guess, to know this is what I want. This is who we want. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Like we talked about so many times, everything Dayton Moore touched turned to gold there for a couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. And then now he's identified other people that he wants to be a part of it that have not panned out after that.
Right.
You know, it hasn't been quite as good after that. And it seemed like there for a little bit in 16, 17, and 18, everything he touched was just, it was like
the coal.
Completely the wrong coal. Decision to make,
yes.
You know?
Yes, absolutely.
And so, you know, but you do have to have the right ideas and go out and get who you want. And then you have to just wait and see. It's a waiting game. See if it all works out the way you anticipated it would. And like I said, I think more often than not it doesn't. But sometimes you can get that lightning in a bottle. You still have to have it, no matter what.
And speaking of that, this closes our show, leads us into the final topic, and that is quarterback and NFL draft. This year's draft is full of highly touted quarterbacks, and the Miami Dolphins are sitting in a wonderful spot right now. You think about the Dolphins. If Tua Tagovailoa turns out to be the quarterback they hope he is, because they apparently have hitched their wagon to him, which I think it's crazy to unhitch it after one abbreviated season for Tua. But the Dolphins had the 3 pick. Then they traded down to the 12. Then they moved back up to number 6, and they've gotten extra picks by doing these moves. Now, you look at this draft right now. The number 1 pick, and the draft, by the way, is next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The number 1 pick, more than likely, is Trevor Lawrence to the Jacksonville Jaguars to team up with Urban Meyer. Zach Wilson is widely expected to be the number 2 overall pick going to the Jets. The Jets traded Sam Darnold to the Panthers, so the Jets need a quarterback. Number 3, the Niners would have their choice of Justin Fields, Mac Jones, or Trey Lance. That will be a tough decision because the 49ers, if whoever they take at 3, they will always compare that guy to the other 2 guys they didn't take. You know, like Trubisky gets compared to Trubisky gets ripped because the Bears traded up from 3 to 2, and Trubisky was the first quarterback taken, number 2 overall, and Mahomes went 10, and Watson went, 12?
12, I think, yeah.
Those two are way better than Trubisky. So you can get it wrong and have egg on your face. So on top of the Bears traded up to a spot just to get Trubisky. That obviously didn't work out. So the Niners are kind of that same boat now that they got to get it right. And it's possible all 3 of those guys, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, will all be great quarterbacks. It's possible. Of course, Lance opted out this past year at North Dakota State. But this is the interesting part here. So the Jaguars are the number 1 pick. They're going to take Lawrence. Number 2, the Jets, is expected they'll take BYU quarterback Zach Wilson. The Niners at number 3, from what I've seen, Justin Fields is probably the guy, although some people have said maybe Mac Jones. So let's say they take Justin Fields at 3. Mac Jones and Trey Lance would still be out there. The Falcons at 4 have Matt Ryan, who has a big contract, and they can't let him go right now. It'd be a huge cap hit. But they could draft a guy like the Chiefs did in Mahomes. Have him be an understudy for a year. I think Trey Lance would be the better guy for that situation. I think Mac Jones is more NFL-ready right away than Trey Lance is. So the Falcons could take a quarterback at 4. They could. We don't know if they will. They could. But anyway, even if the Falcons would take another quarterback at 4, the Dolphins' number 6 pick could prove to be the next best spot for a quarterback. Because I think at 5 is the Bengals. If I remember correctly.
I just pulled it up, actually.
Yeah, pull it. Who's got number 5?
5, yeah, Cincinnati.
Yeah, they're not going to take quarterback. They got Joe Burrow. Of course, he's coming off a torn ACL and all that, but they expect him to recover. So the number 6 pick, the Dolphins, and they clearly don't want a quarterback because they've hitched their wagon to Tua. So now think about the teams that are right behind the Dolphins. The Lions at 7, they have Jared Goff, and I don't think they believe he's the answer. And they traded for him and traded Matthew Stafford to the Rams. The Panthers are at 8, and even though they got Sam Darnold, if they really like one of these young guys, they could draft. And then there's the Broncos at 9, and I would keep an eye on the Broncos because I don't think Drew Lock is the answer in Denver. He could be, but I don't think he is. Keep an eye on this because the Lions, if they're at 7, if they, you know, they might want to trade with the Bengals and get the 5. They might trade with the Dolphins, go up pick just to make sure nobody else trades with the Dolphins to jump the Lions if the Lions want Mac Jones or Trey Lance. The Panthers, I don't think, are going to jump. If you traded for Sam Darnold, he's a young quarterback, I don't see the Panthers taking a quarterback. So keep an eye on the Broncos and keep that draft order up in front of you, Dusty. So the Broncos are number 9. The Broncos could easily trade up to the 6 pick, and they could go get a Trey Lance or a Mac Jones, or if it's Justin Fields, it's still available, and the Broncos could still get one of the top 5 quarterbacks in this draft. I believe, and this happens every year in the draft, I've heard people say, well, you know, one of these quarterbacks is really a mid to late first round pick. It doesn't matter. Teams are going to grab quarterbacks. I would be surprised if one of these 5 quarterbacks is still available after pick 10. I think 5 of the top 10 picks will be these quarterbacks because there's such a premium on quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And so the Broncos, and they might not take Justin Fields. They might take Mac Jones if he's available. I think Mac Jones is the most NFL-ready quarterback right now. But Fields with his mobility, Lance that can create. And there's the Patriots, I believe, sitting at 15, and they could use a quarterback. And I don't think Trey Lance will fall that far, but the Patriots could easily trade up. But they're going to trade with an in-division rival, the Dolphins? Probably unlikely. Who's at number 10?
Dallas.
They're okay with Dak. They paid him a lot of money. 11?
New York Giants.
Giants have Daniel Jones. They're not going to draft quarterback. 12?
Eagles.
They just picked up goodness, they got Jalen Hurts. Well, they could draft one. They traded Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. They got Jalen Hurts. They could. They traded the Eagles. The Eagles are 11. Is that what you said? Yeah, because the Eagles. Okay, so the Eagles traded. They
the
traded
Giants
from
are 11.
The Eagles traded from 6 to 12. That's when the Dolphins went back up. So the Eagles at 12, they could take a quarterback. Okay, 13.
Chargers have Herbert.
No, 14.
Vikings.
They got Cousins. 15 is the Patriots
again. Lions again. New England, sorry.
Okay, New England's 15.
I was looking at a mock draft where they traded New England, traded
with
the Lions.
If you're a Bronco fan out there, you're probably sitting there going, okay, I hope the Lions are okay to go with Goff. The Panthers are happy with Darnold that they just picked up. And the Broncos then would be able to get a quarterback even staying at number 9. The thing is, the Patriots or somebody else that we haven't mentioned, who's after the Patriots? 16.
It's Arizona.
And there you got a quarterback. 17.
Vegas Raiders.
That could be interesting.
Yeah.
18.
Dolphins again.
They're good. 19.
Washington.
They need a quarterback.
Yeah.
20.
Bears.
Who'd they get? Oh, they got Andy Dalton. They could use a quarterback. They could use a quarterback. Yeah. 21.
Colts.
They got Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
22.
Titans have.
They got
Tannehill.
Tannehill. 23. They got a big contract.
And the Jets are up again.
Yeah.
Steelers.
See, the Steelers need to get – they got to get an heir apparent at some point.
Yeah. I signed Haskins. Maybe they think they can do something with him.
Okay. Who's those Steelers?
Jaguars.
We know that one.
Yeah, Browns got Baker.
They got Baker.
Baltimore's got Lamar.
Yep.
Saints seem to be okay with what they're doing.
Did they re-sign Jameis Winston?
They
re-signed
Winston.
Yeah.
And they have Taysom Hill. So
they probably all right.
Rodgers, Packers, Josh Allen.
And it take a lot of capital to move
Patrick
up
Mahomes,
if you're the Saints
Tom
that
Brady.
High. The Saints have to give up a lot to move up that high. Yep. So what we're basically saying here, correct me if I'm wrong, We're talking maybe Lions. I think the Panthers are out because they traded for Darnold. So Lions, Broncos, Raiders, Patriots. Am I missing anybody?
I don't feel like it.
Maybe Eagles. Maybe
I don't,
Eagles.
You know,
Eagles
in
could.
Philadelphia, I don't know
they
that could. They would trade up to do it, right? Like,
But they traded down and got some
picks.
If they
fall underneath them,
if they were so big on a quarterback, why did they trade out of the 6
pick? Yeah, exactly.
So there's 4 or 5 teams there that could jockey and trade with the Dolphins, and I would doubt that the Patriots will be able to get it done with a division rival. So if you're a Chiefs fan, and this is why I bring this up, if you're a Bronco or Chiefs fan out there listening, this is why you should pay attention to this. Because the Broncos aren't sold in Drew Lock. I think there's a good chance the Broncos will move up to get one of those remaining five quarterbacks, or they might get him at number nine. And, or, you know, the wild card and dark horse in this, the Raiders have had a lot of picks. I think they have a lot of picks the next couple of years. The Raiders could just jump up and go above to the, I know, the Raiders with the 17th pick, so they have to move up 11 spots. The Raiders might move all the way up to get a Trey Lance or a Mac Jones. So it could be two division rivals of the Chiefs that are going to fight to trade up with the Dolphins to get that sixth pick and make sure they get the fifth quarterback. Or they might have a choice. If the Falcons don't take a quarterback, they'll have their choice of maybe Jones or Lance. It's just a matter of how much, what's their scouting report, how good do they feel about that quarterback? Do they feel like the Chiefs do in Mahomes and move? I mean, like I said, the Saints could still be that dark horse that really trades up. If they love Trey Lance and all of a sudden he slides down to, you know, number seven or eight, and they're like, you know what, we got to beat the Broncos to the punch and get that guy. They like Taysom Hill for some reason as a quarterback. I don't fully see it. Jameis Winston, I think, could be a bargain in the right offense because he's still got talent. But that might be a dark horse. But you really look at it, the Broncos are in a position here to make a move. I mean, the Broncos are in a pretty good spot to make a move. There's not, like, tons of teams trying to go get a quarterback. It doesn't look like, based on what we just went through. You'd have to – it's probably you, the Patriots, as the two main guys that really need to upgrade at quarterback, unless you're sold on Drew Lock, and the Patriots definitely have a hole at quarterback. There are some people saying Lance could slide all the way down to 15 and Patriots take him. I don't see that.
No, I think they'd have to trade up if they want to get him.
Right. And then somebody,
or if they want to get Mac Jones. Like I looked a couple mocks where they trade up with the Lions to get Mac Jones out of seven.
Mac Jones might be the better fit for the Patriots.
Yeah.
And I've seen these stories about the Patriots aren't going to overreach to get a quarterback. Well, of course they're going to hear that. That's what you put out from your camp.
Yeah.
You're not going to get honesty from any of these guys. The Chiefs didn't go out and say, you know what, Mahomes is really
nobody
the guy
saw
we
that
want.
Coming. Right?
No, because they kept it quiet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's why I think you got to look at the Eagles and the Raiders, and if you really want to go deep, the Saints. That might say all the right things, and you look and go, well, they got Winston, they got Hill. But if there's a guy that slides a little bit deeper in the draft, let's say, for instance, Trey Lance is available at 14. Who'd you say is at 14?
I'm going to get back to that. I'm way at the end of it right now. 14's Minnesota, I think. Yeah.
Okay, and the Patriots would probably take a quarterback if it's there at 15. Yeah. The Saints could move up from 24 to 14. I mean, that's not nearly as big a jump as what the Chiefs did. That's late first round to mid. The Chiefs went from late first to top 10. So keep an eye on that as well. But it's going to be a lot of trades in this draft, I think.
Yeah, there already has been.
Right. Right. There's been quite a, and the Dolphins can keep playing this out. The Dolphins keep trading down. They can get a whole bunch of picks and trade down if there's not a guy they want. And there seems to be enough suitors that they, you know, Dolphins might trade, you know, Dolphins might trade and get out of the 18th pick too. Who knows? Point is, Dolphins are sitting pretty. Clover's been saying this for a while. They got all these draft picks. Now they add a receiver. They'll probably get a stud receiver at six if they stay there. If they trade down, they'll still get a stud receiver. Here's the next question when it comes to the receivers. My son says Devontae Smith should be the number one wide receiver. He thinks he's the best. I said, just because he won the Heisman, that doesn't mean he's the best wide receiver. I said, Ja'Marr Chase sat out and opted out last year at LSU. Mm-hmm. He had a very similar, just as good a year as Devontae Smith the year before with LSU when they won it all, and Burrow was a Heisman Trophy winner. I said, I'd take Ja'Marr Chase as my number one wide receiver. And I said, Jalen Waddle might be the second best receiver, and that's on Alabama's team, and he was hurt. Who knows what he would have done last year, and Smith benefited from that injury. And Smith, I think, will be a great wide receiver. But if you're the Dolphins, you're sitting at six. You can trade down to the Broncos at nine, give the Broncos a six pick, pick up a couple of picks probably, and you can still get the receiver you probably want. You got Waddle, Smith, or Chase. I don't think you can go wrong with any one of those three. There's a lot of good receivers. The Chiefs could easily take a receiver at 31 if it's there. So the receiver core is pretty deep again this year. Corner, there's some really good corners. That could be something the Chiefs go for. And, of course, we know the holes they have at tackle, at left and right tackle spots. So the draft is coming up very quickly. I am intrigued by the moves these teams are going to make, and I'm very intrigued by what will the Niners go with at three, because they're going to have a pick of three different quarterbacks, and if they get it right, but if they get it wrong, it's going to be obvious they got it wrong, unless all three end up being bad.
Yeah.
You know? Who do you take? Justin Fields, Mac Jones, or Trey Lance at number three? I take Fields.
Yeah, I'm leaning toward that.
I take Fields because of the way the NFL
Lance would be the bottom of my list.
I agree with you.
Completely honest.
I agree with you.
Out of all five of those quarterbacks, some people might take Justin Fields over Wilson, but I don't think that's going to happen. But
right. And Jones, I think, could be a good fit in Atlanta if they wanted to take him at four. But I don't know. Lance is the wild card of this whole thing. Opted out last year. He's the wild card to it all. Very athletic kid. And we know there's been success from that level, obviously, with Carson Wentz. So, to be continued.
Yes.
Next week. I got a feeling there might be a trade between now and then. Just a feeling.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.